Welcome to Planting Pinellas, the podcast that digs deep into the heart of gardening in Pinellas County, presented by Master Gardener volunteers of the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro. Whether you're a local looking to connect with your community or a visitor curious about your area's culture, conservation, and all things green, this is the place for you.
Join us as we explore the people, places, projects, and of course, plants that make Pinellas a thriving hub of sustainability, innovation, and natural beauty. From gardening tips to environmental initiatives, we've got the roots of Pinellas covered. So grab your gardening gloves and let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Planting Pinellas. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro.
Today, we are talking about the Florida Friendly Landscaping Principle Number 3. Now, last month, we did Principle Number 1. We are skipping temporarily over Principle Number 2 for a very good reason. And Principle Number 3 is about fertilizing appropriately. Now, if you have been in Pinellas County for very long, you may be aware that we actually have a fertilizer ban, which extends from June until September. June 1st until September 30th. So if we had stayed on our regular schedule, we would be talking about fertilizer when you can't even buy it in the stores. So we figured we would give you a little bit of a heads up warning and talk about it here this month. Just let you know, what is it? Why do we need it? Do we need it? How do we use it? Just understanding how to use it appropriately.
How to use it appropriately is the key. But I just want to think about this, that, you know, people think fertilizer is plant food, and it's really not. I only bring this up because a commercial's been on about a big box store, and the person walks in and the plant's not looking too good and goes to the manager, and she says, well, it needs plant food. Oh, it needs food. And so she provides fertilizer. Person comes back and the plant is looking wonderful. And then she comes back again with a bouquet of fruit and vegetables, and everything is wonderful. The point being is that fertilizer is really not plant food.
It's more like vitamins.
It's more like vitamins. And why is it more like vitamins, Charlotte?
Well, you can live and be healthy without taking a supplement vitamin. And your plants can grow and thrive and be healthy without necessarily needing a synthetic fertilizer. But it depends on what else they're getting. So if you're providing good quality soil and you're providing, in our example of food for a person, that you're eating healthy things, you're not eating junk, and you're not constantly depleting the resource that you need, but you're enhancing it by just natural methods, then the vitamins become a little less important, or you can skip them and still be okay.
Exactly. And the point being here is that plants make their food. I mean, Right. They photosynthesize, they make their sugars, they make their carbohydrates, they get what they need. And I'm going to go back for a second, because it's important as we focus on each of these principles, on each of these episodes, they are dependent on each other.
Yes.
So if you plant the right plant in the right place and have good soil, you may not need as much fertilizer. And therefore, if we go back to the ban, it wouldn't matter if I'm fertilizing earlier in the year or even if I don't have to fertilize.
Yeah. And all plants need nutrients for growth. And they either get those nutrients from the soil or whatever you're growing them in, or you as a gardener can provide supplemental nutrient by applying a fertilizer, applying a compost, some organic material, whether it's a packaged item or something, even just a specific nutrient. Like sometimes a plant might be low in iron, but it doesn't need nitrogen or it doesn't need whatever other element. You can supplement just that specific nutrient. But I want to throw you a curveball, Alan, because I figured out the exact answer to any resident of Pinellas County, any gardener in Florida that wants to have a healthy lawn, they want to fertilize their yawn. They want
I'm
to fertilize
talking about turf grass.
Their turf grass, their ornamental plants, whatever it is.
Okay.
I figured out the perfect answer of exactly what they need to buy. Don't you want to know what it is?
I have no idea.
A soil test.
That makes perfect
you
sense.
You start by figuring out what you already have, because if your soil is healthy, then you don't need to supplement it. So the first thing to do is check out what you're already dealing with. And if you've got good nutrients in your soil, then don't add supplements, because that will contribute to runoff. And the runoff is the reason that we have those ordinances, because if you're fertilizing inappropriately or at the wrong time or in a way that's not advised, or just putting something in the soil that it's already saturated with, you could be doing damage to your plant, but you can also be doing damage to natural water sources.
So that's an interesting point that you just made. So fertilizer by itself is okay, but if you don't use it appropriately and in the right amount and don't follow the label, and we're going to get a little detailed into that later on, you can actually damage the plant.
Right.
I think people don't realize that, you know, they think, okay, you know, my plant's not looking too good. Let me fertilize. Oh, it's still not looking good. Fertilize. And then you actually can kill the plant with love, in a sense.
Well, just like as humans, if we got too much potassium, for example, in our diet, that causes major health imbalances. And the same thing goes for plants, whether it's potassium or some other nutrient, that if they get too much of it. And an interesting thing I read in studying for this episode was when you are wanting leafy growth, nitrogen is usually the macronutrient that you want to add in to make things look green. So your lawn fertilizer is going to be more focused on nitrogen. But if you have a fruiting plant or a flowering plant, the nitrogen can actually counteract the plant's natural response to where it won't produce those fruits and it won't produce those flowers, because the nitrogen is just telling it to put out green. And the green isn't what you want from a tomato plant. You want red. You want a tomato. Yeah. And so, you know, whatever the plant is, understanding what does it need for the different stages of its growth? What does it need for the desired result?
So then how's the soil test help that? I mean, because I know the soil tests that we can get here in Florida from IFAS. You can do it in two ways, I believe. So you can, right, you can do it at the macro level and just have the nitrogen and phosphorus, or you can actually look for micronutrients in terms of the soil test. And so do you think, I mean, I'm just asking, mm-hmm, do you think it'd be better to go for the full thing and have all the micronutrients in there, or just to do the macronutrients?
I would say if you're trying to grow a petunia, you don't need as much detail as if you're trying to grow a crop of blueberries or some other fruit or, you know, whatever produce. If you're actually in an agricultural kind of concept, even if it's a micro farm, even if it's like me where I just have planting beds with just enough of a harvest to feed me and my family, even at that point, I'm looking for results. So at that point, I want to be a little bit more in depth. But just a casual gardener that doesn't care how many tomatoes they get in a year, as long as they get at least one or two, they got their money's worth in their mind, or they just had fun, whatever. But, you know, right, let's be honest, we want the results. So at that point, it's worth putting in, and it costs a little bit more, as much information as you want. There's different levels of testing. So if you want to spend a few extra dollars, right, to get the more thorough test, then that gives you a better starting point to know what to do. And especially when you're starting a garden, starting a new section of your yard with a certain kind of plant, knowing what's there is going to help you make sure that that plant is appropriate for that spot, and then what you can do to support it more efficiently.
So to get back to the ordinances for a second, because the ordinances are important in terms of, again, the reason that this was done. I think you mentioned this up front a little bit, is during our rainy season, a lot of runoff.
Right.
And researchers have found is that there's been more nutrients in the water that are causing more algal blooms, which are not good for our lakes, or not good for our beaches, or not good for any of our area. And especially where we live in our coastal community of Pinellas County, where just about everything is a watershed.
Right.
So having this restriction is hopefully going to have an impact on that. I was telling you before we were on that my family and I were up in Ocala and went to Silver Springs, and we did the 5-mile kayak down the river. It was absolutely magnificent, absolutely beautiful. I recommend it to everyone. So the eelgrass, that's the most important type of grass in our springs, was beautiful, but all over I could see very fuzzy algae growth on it. And I was like, wow, not good.
Well, because the plant needs to be able to photosynthesize. So if it's coated in a layer of algae, then it's not going to be getting as much sunlight. Even underwater, it's not going to be benefiting in the way that it needs to benefit.
It kills the eelgrass, which is what is natural there. And then the springs become very mucky, and it's terrible. And so even in where we were, which was literally out in the middle of nowhere, you can see the effects of the fertilizer runoff in the springs.
And we see that here. Like, last summer, I remember going down to some of the beach areas, even in the spring, as early as maybe March and April, and the red tide was in an algae bloom. And the fish kills that I was seeing, the smells that come along with that, the irritation from the red tide itself, that I was having some breathing reaction to it, and my eyes were itching for days after being even in the general area, just driving down Gulf Boulevard. And so we see that, and we think it's not a big deal. This ordinance is voluntary, right? No, it's an ordinance. It's a law. It's something that we are mandated, and actually there's a pretty hefty enforcement for that.
$10,000 a day.
A day for violations.
For violations of this. Mm-hmm. And the enforcement is done, at least in Pinellas County, by code enforcement.
Right.
But this is a countywide ordinance. I think what was interesting in doing my research for this, too, in looking at the ordinances, some counties don't have an ordinance, but other counties have a very strict ordinance. So yeah. Even some of the counties around us are even stricter.
Well, and the more localized that you get, the more opportunity there is for greater restrictions. So there might be something that applies to the entire state of Florida that then Pinellas County or the Tampa Bay area makes that even more restrictive. And then a specific town like Palm Harbor or Gulfport might have an additional ordinance that they cannot lessen the oversight of the county, but they can apply even more strict requirements within their jurisdiction, within their municipality.
So I think that what's important to know about the ordinances, too, is that there are some exceptions. Golf courses.
Interesting.
Specialized turf. So specialized turf managers are required to follow from the Florida Friendly Best Management Practices for Protection of Water Resources by the Green Industry. Bonafide farm operations. I don't know we have any in Pinellas County. We may have a few.
Maybe some micro farms.
Micro farms, but that would be one. This is, I think, the one that many people are going to be interested to hear about, vegetable gardens.
Okay.
So vegetable gardens are an exception if you own individual property or owners or community, provided that fertilizer application rates do not exceed the UF IFAS recommendation. But the point being is, if you have a vegetable garden, you can. Now, will you be able to buy some?
And that's the interesting thing. But before we even go there, it really boils down to the title of our episode today, The Label is the Law, that whatever the label says, you have to follow that or you are in violation. You are potentially subject to a consequence. And whether it's a monetary consequence like a fine if you get caught or whether it's an environmental consequence that you're contributing without knowing it because you're not following those guidelines that have been presented there, that your environment is being impacted by it. So it really does matter. And it matters for every one of us. If I hate red tide, I hate it, but I love vegetable gardening. So I want to be responsible with how I use fertilizers or other substances in my garden so that I'm not contributing to the problem.
So excellent point. The next exception is yard waste or compost and mulches, or other similar materials that are primarily organic in nature and are applied to improve the physical condition of the soil. So that's a very interesting one because we haven't really gotten into inorganic versus organic fertilizers.
Right.
But that's primarily what we're talking about here in our band. And what we're talking about in this episode is a lot of inorganic fertilizers because
right.
organic fertilizers are, I don't want to say better.
Well, again, it comes back to... Are you going to eat a salad or take a vitamin? Because you're still getting nutrients from both, but you can, think of it as just having a healthy lifestyle by eating those salads where you're putting the mulch on your garden. And that's honestly a big enough thing that there's a whole principle and therefore an episode coming.
Yeah, we'll get
just about mulch.
We'll get into mulch much, much later.
Well, let's take a step back and let's just honestly say, what is fertilizer?
Okay.
Because fertilizer in the things that are regulated are what we refer to as the NPK. So that's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. K is the chemical symbol for potassium. When you select a bag of fertilizer, you're looking at three numbers, usually right on the front of the bag. It might be something like a 15-0-15, 16-2-8, 5-5-5, whatever it is. The first number represents the percentage of nitrogen in the bag. The second number refers to phosphorus, and the third number is the amount of potassium. So, for example, a 50-pound bag that's marked as 16-2-8, would be 16% of that bag is nitrogen. So that's 8 pounds out of 50. 2% or 1 pound total is phosphorus, and 8% is like 4 pounds total out of the 50 that would be potassium. And then whatever the remaining weight, because obviously that doesn't add up to 100%, that is either other nutrients or ingredients, just organic matter, and micronutrients as well. So a macronutrient is something that it's usually present in a larger quantity. The plant needs it in a larger quantity. And then the micronutrient is that it's in smaller quantities or needed in lower doses. So the main nutrients that a plant will need in those macros, we've got the NPK, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, but there's actually three other macronutrients, which are calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. And a complete fertilizer will contain all of these.
So there's something called a complete fertilizer and an incomplete fertilizer, right?
Right. And so they isolate out certain things. And often what you'll see isolated are actually the micronutrients. So the trace elements or the minor elements are things like boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, I had to look up how to say that one and I still got it wrong, and zinc. Those are often available enough in the soil that you don't have to supplement them, but they are included in many fertilizers, but they're also sold as individual nutrients. So you might have an iron deficiency or a zinc deficiency that you can supplement just that, and you're more likely to be able to buy those individual elements even during the ban because the ban doesn't apply to the micronutrients. It only applies to half of the macronutrients. It's specifically the nitrogen and the phosphorus. Now, an interesting thing about phosphorus, it's always banned.
I was waiting for you, I was going to bring that up, that in Florida, phosphorus is not in any of our fertilizers.
It's not supposed to be.
Not supposed to be.
Right. But it's also subject to those exceptions. So if you buy a vegetable fertilizer, it will probably have phosphorus in it.
Right.
But you can find fertilizers that have a zero. So you can find a fertilizer that it might have a 005. You can actually find triple zero fertilizers that are not subject to the ban because they don't contain nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. However, some retailers are so concerned about being fined that they won't even make those available, that they just completely wipe the shelves.
Yeah, they wipe the shelves. And I can understand why, because as we're just talking here, I can just imagine that this is a little confusing.
Right.
This is very confusing in a lot of ways because of the way the ban is written and what nutrients are allowed and what nutrients aren't and what exceptions there are. Okay, so this law was enacted, at least in Pinellas County, in 2010. It's a little over 20-some-odd years. Has it been effective? In doing my research, I found on the IFAS site a report that was done in 2024 that looked at all this. And I'm not going to get into all the details. I just want to read a couple sentences from this report, and we'll have this report in the show notes so you can read the entire thing, and you want to look at graphs and you're a data geek, go for it if you want. The results from this study show that lakes in the counties with fertilizer ordinances exhibited improved water quality trends after ordinances were enacted. Relative to counties without ordinances, but ordinance timing is important. More research is needed to address specific details and mechanisms that are responsible for the improvements in water quality trends associated with fertilizer ordinances to continue optimizing benefits of the ordinances while minimizing any negative impacts. I don't know what the negative impacts are. I guess it's that you can't fertilize, but I found that interesting that they obviously were trying to do a good study and looking at counties that have ordinances, counties that don't, and we're comparing them. And again, anybody who wants to get into the data, it's in there. But it did show that it did have some improvement in water quality. So that's a good thing. I mean, we have a long way to go.
Right.
But that's a good thing. So the bans are beneficial.
Right. And they're helping us move in the right direction. It depends and it relies on participation. It relies on people realizing this is not a suggestion. This is not a, if you feel like it, this is a law. And this is something that you have to follow what the label says. You have to use these products correctly and effectively. And I found a really interesting article, again from IFAS, that it's talking about the four R's. Now, this was targeted more through the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Services. And again, with best management practices, using this concept of the four R's, and actually there's a bonus R, it says the right rate, the right source, the right timing, the right placement, and the right water management. So again, just like our nine principles of Florida Friendly Landscaping, these things all interconnect. The right placement is just like right plant, right place. The right water management, we're getting into that next month. We'll catch up with principle two. All of these things that you work through with this are using them correctly so that it is giving you the benefit to the plant. Obviously, the vegetables would be in that exception, that exemption rather, that you want your vegetables to produce vegetables. So a negative impact to not having enough nutrient, if you're not fertilizing at all, or if your soil is poor, then you're not going to get produce. Your plant is going to drop those fruits because it can't support them.
But planting in our soil is pretty bad. So having a raised bed and making sure that the soil that you have and that you've added is better.
In a sense, you're creating an environment for it.
Right.
And you're managing that environment yourself. And you can use a lot of organic matter, which our soil is short in organic matter. We have mostly sandy soil or some loamy soil in parts of the county, but not a lot of really rich organic matter in our soils. So mulching with things that can break down into the soil and provide that organic matter, or specifically composting that organic matter and then supplementing it back right. into, whether you do that on site with, you know, a home composting system, or whether you purchase certified compost that's been cured and processed to make sure that it's got good quality source and, you know, it's not going to be harming your vegetable, because you want it to be well aged.
Right.
You're using compost, you want it to be well aged.
And that goes, I mean, goes back to these R's that you were just talking about, right? I mean, in terms of the right source. And so thinking about what you're doing, if it's going to be an ornamental garden, then that's a different story in terms
right.
of what fertilizer you may use or may not have to use, as opposed to a vegetable gardening. And again, it goes back to the right plant.
Exactly.
Don't mean to go back to principle one again, but we always go back to principle one, right plant, the right place. It's the foundation of all of it, which goes back to not having to use as much fertilizer. And if we don't have to use as much fertilizer, then we have less runoff and everything is much better in terms of our environment, in terms of our water quality.
An example we were chatting about earlier, I made the decision on my landscape that I don't want to deal with the fertilization needs of palm trees. And I know you mentioned you've got a couple of varieties of palm trees on your property, but we were kind of working with a blank slate when we moved into the home that I'm in now. And I did some research on it, and I just decided if they need that much support and that much maintenance, and that they're kind of counterproductive in a lawn setting, because the needs of turf grass or even turf replacement are so different from the needs of palm trees. Palm trees have some very specific nutrient needs like boron and some other things that's just something that I said, I don't need a palm tree in my yard badly enough to want to do the work for it. But you already had them when you moved in.
In my neighborhood, we have a bunch of palms, but in our backyard, we decided to put in some Christmas palms. And I didn't know about fertilizing. This is before I became a master gardener. Palms are just part of our livelihood here in Florida. And so then once I got through the course and I'm like, oh, they need fertilizer. They really do. And they really, really, really do. And so mine became a little ragged looking at one point. And then I went ahead and found the fertilizer that I needed using the label, which
right.
was really important. Read the label of how much I'm supposed to put down and when I'm supposed to put this down. And I did that. I think it was in March that I put the fertilizer down. And they're doing wonderfully now. They look much better. And they're producing the palm fronds much more. And then that goes back to, if you're going to fertilize a palm, it has very specific kinds of fertilizer to make them thrive.
Right.
And as opposed to something that you would use for your vegetables.
So it really is a little bit more of arming yourself with a good knowledge and putting in a little bit more research, but then also a little bit more effort. That a weed and feed is a popular kind of product because you think one and done, and yet those can really be more harmful than beneficial because they're not necessarily going to be the right balances. And, you know, the broadcasting and targeting, removing certain plants and then feeding other plants, that's probably not going to be a one-size-fits-all for most people. So those really are not recommended. You want to get that soil test. You want to figure out, what do I actually need? And then understanding the appropriate way to apply it. So there are some best management practices for professionals that really apply to individuals as well, that unless you have a soil test that is documented a phosphorus deficiency, you should never be applying phosphorus in Pinellas County. We just don't need it. Our soil already has plenty. Unless, like you said, you've got some exception in your yard where it's been proved with a soil test that you should add it. And I think in some places you have to have a permit to be able to use it. But then no more than 4 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet of turf or whatever every year. You know, a total of 4 pounds per year. And then you shouldn't be applying it to new plantings for at least 30 days. You should make sure that you've got at least 50% slow-release nitrogen. Up to 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 feet can be applied per application. So the maximum of 4 pounds in a year, you should only be doing 1 pound at a time. So 2 times a year, 4 times a year, whatever you're doing, that you're making sure that you're following the label. And whatever your product is, whether it's a granular product or a liquid product, those water-soluble treatments actually can't exceed more than a half pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. So it gets really specific.
I was going to say, this sounds a little complicated, you know, in a sense, for the general homeowner,
right,
who wants to just put some fertilizer down.
So to step it back and simplify, you really just, you can look around and see, do my plants look happy? And if they look happy, then why mess with them? If they're already thriving and they're already doing well and they already look good, then you don't have to just feed them for the sake of feeding them, that you're not supplementing something that they're not missing.
I kind of just want to bring back what you just said, which I think is really important point to make it simple. If the plants look healthy and they look happy, there's no need to fertilize. I think there's a mindset that people have about plants that you have to fertilize.
Well, and it comes back to what we said last month. The more you do, the more that you have to do, or at least the more you think you have to do. Because just like with watering, fertilizing has similar symptoms to deficiencies as well as surplus. So if you see the color changing, if you see the wilt, if you see the signs of stress, are sometimes because they've got too much of a good thing and sometimes because they've got not enough. So that really goes back to getting a soil test, getting it checked out to see, what am I working with? So before you install a new plant, get your ground tested in the area that you think you want to plant it. Maybe pick a couple of different spots and figure out which one's the best. And then if your plant is showing signs of stress and you've done some basic care and it's just not responding to that, then get your soil tested again and figure out, why is my plant having a problem? And bring a picture to the help desk. Send it in, yeah, as an email to the extension help desk and say, here's what I've done, here's what I'm seeing, and what's going on? Is there something that maybe I missed?
And that's a good point, that there's help out there. It's free.
Absolutely.
Absolutely free. And you don't have to come down to the extension service. You can actually send an email, you can call, and the help desk and the people that are there and the extension service that are there can help, and help a great deal. And the other thing I was just thinking of in terms of what you were saying is that if the plant's looking, you know, a little weak, it may not be a deficiency in a nutrient. It could be a bug and right, or an insect, and we'll get into
and it could
that
just
principle
be
later on.
The way that it's responding to the changing in the environment, as we're starting to get more heat and more rain, that plants respond in different ways. So sometimes you need to just give it a little time. If it's not obviously in a crisis, just to see if it kind of works itself out. And if it's obviously not improving or worsening quickly, then that's where you want to get some help, or just go ahead and do an intervention that you've researched for yourself. So kind of wrapping up, I want to go back to those four R's that we talked about, and I'll read them one more time. The right rate, the right source, the right place, the right time. And then the last one, the bonus R, is the right irrigation. And I learned a term in this that they called it fertigation. And so it's the concept that fertilizing and irrigation go hand in hand. The same nutrients are present in reclaimed water. So if you're using reclaimed water, your need for fertilizer is zero or at least greatly reduced. So really just coming back to using these things effectively, following the label, because the label is the law, but it's also there to walk you through the process. It'll tell you how much to apply and, you know, figure out the size of your yard by measuring it. You can use online tools to measure it, or just get out there with a good old tape measure and figure out, this is how many square feet I've got to cover. This is how much product I need.
And I think the bottom line, at least from my perspective, is gardening and landscaping is supposed to be fun.
Yes.
Again, you do a little research up front, talked about that last month, and we'll continue to talk about that. It's supposed to be fun. And if you do that little bit of research and utilize the resources that are available to you, you may not have to be doing as much work.
Right.
In terms of, you know, what I have to do, because I'm going to actually enjoy my garden. I'm going to enjoy my landscape.
Yeah, and a happy garden makes a happy gardener. So when you walk out and you see that everything is thriving and blooming and producing, then you're just able to enjoy and maintain rather than having to fix and troubleshoot. But it all goes hand in hand. It's part of the process, but we want you to really enjoy the process. So our conclusion to every episode is what we call the Ready, Set, Grow. And for the month of May, I will have a link with the specifics of this, but things that you want to get ready, and I'm going to use the H word here, please forgive me, getting ready for hurricane season.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's coming. We all know it's coming. We don't want to think about it any sooner than we have to, but trees are always a big source of concern when hurricanes are a factor. So just making sure that your trees are appropriately pruned by an ISA certified arborist. You can find that online. I'll put a link to find an arborist, and making sure that they're properly maintained and pruned as needed.
Things to plant at this time. I know it's May. Things are getting humid. It's getting warm. But some annuals, perennials, and wildflowers that you could still plant these days are salvia, wax begonia, coleus, and ornamental peppers. Some bulbs can do okay. Some lilies like Amazon, Aztec, even some herbs.
Right. Basil, Mexican tarragon, ginger, rosemary, and summer savory. You mentioned about ornamental peppers, but it's actually a great time to plant edible peppers, especially the hot peppers love the hot weather. And things like sweet potato and spinach, those are great to plant for the hot weather. Other things that you can do to make sure that your garden is set up to thrive is watching for pests. And as the warmer temperatures come, there's going to be increased pest activity. So looking for things like thrips and scale and mites, all of those can be handled through different integrated pest management methods. We'll have an episode on that one day. That's an awesome subject
itself.
That's
a very awesome subject.
But getting out in your garden, enjoying it, getting it ready to thrive, and looking for those Florida-friendly ways to handle it. And honestly, there's no such thing as a Florida-friendly fertilizer. It's just the different aspects of it that make it Florida-friendly by the way that you use it, and having it in the right place at the right time, and making sure that it's the right thing that you need, that you're putting that source in the right quantities. So enjoying your garden, getting a chance to really just watch it grow, and being a part of that creative process that is gardening. And in the challenges that we have here in Pinellas, the salt, the heat, the sun, all of those things that we always talk about, you can still have a thriving garden here. And it just takes a little bit more creativity to work with our surroundings and just get out there and try. So just to re-summarize, using the right products in the right ways, you just want to follow that label instruction. The label is the law. Abiding by what it's telling you. And plants can grow in the wild without any help from humans. So the reasoning behind why are we using it is that they will respond in different ways to different fertilizers or different substances in the soil. And we can control a desirable outcome with that. All of these things come back to giving you the groundwork for a thriving garden. And that's what we all want.
Thanks for tuning into Planting Pinellas. We hope you're feeling inspired to get involved, learn more, and grow alongside this incredible community.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, leave us 5 stars or a review. And don't forget to share with fellow plant lovers. Until next time, keep planting, keep growing, and keep making Pinellas County a place to thrive.
This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension in Pinellas County, Florida, an equal opportunity institution.